Peretz Zayin, Peretz Vav, Pasuk of Vav. Vayomer, Im Shamoa Tishma Lekol Hashem Lokecha, if you listen to the voice of Hashem, your God, Vayosha Ben of Tasa, and you do it straight in his eyes, V'chazan tol mitzvosov, and you listen to his mitzvahs, V'shamar to kol chukov, and you guard all of his commandments, then good things will happen. It seems to be superfluous to claim im shamoa tishma, if you will listen, and then V'chazan to, which also from the word ozen means to listen. Why the repetition? Says Rashi, Im shamoa tishma zu kabola shiyakablu aleihem. That simply means you're mekabel. You accept. These are the rules. We're going to keep them. V'ha'azanto. Tate oznayim l'dakdek behem. Since the word ozen, ear, you tilt your ear to listen. To be medactic, to try to do more than just accept. I hear, that's the mitzvah, I hear. This is more than that. I'm not just mekabel to be a shomer Torah mitzvah, this is to listen. The ha'azanta means to actively listen, to look for more, to try to do it exactly right, to be medactic the mitzvah. That's an attitude. An attitude that it's not just enough, whatever I know, that's what I'll keep, but rather that I'm open-minded to hearing more. I want to hear more. I want to know more of the details as to how Hashem thinks it's best for me to run my life. A lot of times we get into personal difficulties when we hear too much. More than we want to hear. More than we know already. When we're exposed to halacha, that's clear for all to see, but they've never seen before. They've never been exposed to it before. And a person says to themselves, you know, I'm mekabel, I know what the halachas are, but I'm not going to look for more. That just makes my life more difficult. And then gets thrust into their life people in Sfarim who tell them more. They realize there is more to be medactic, to be exacting. Everybody wants to get, here all the Bechinas, everyone wants to get those extra last, those last couple points. No one's really happy with an 80, or 90, or 100, if you get more than 100. Everyone wants those points. Sometimes we call that the Pintle Yid, you know. Just play on words. The Pintle Yid. Everyone wants that point. We understand when it comes to a test, we want to get that 100. But when it comes to mitzvahs, it's okay. The way I'm doing it is fine. I don't need to know more. True. I'm going to tell you something today that's very difficult to hear. Just to give you an example of something that really requires listening in order to be able to deal with it. Years ago, Mr. Yaakov Sklar was English principal. I told him he used to come to the Shmuzin. He enjoyed them. This one boggled his mind. Boggled his mind. Turn to the last Rashi in Parshas Yisro on page 2. The Torah tells us, the Mizbeach has a ramp that goes up to the top of it. So when the Kohanim walk up the ramp, not steps. You can't go up by steps. You have to go up by a ramp. So that erva is not revealed as going up the ramp to the mizbeach. Says Rashi, what does that mean? If there are steps, you need to widen your steps like this. If you're walking up steps, so then you have to pick your foot up, and from underneath, could be revealing to the Mizbeach, to the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, ever. Therefore, the Mizbeach had to be built as a ramp. Because a ramp, you take smaller steps as you go up the ramp. Frekt Rashi, an unbelievable kasha. You know, a regular Kohen wore four begadim. There was something on his head. There was something that covered him from shoulder to ankle. There was a belt. But there was something else also. Va'afal pi she'eino gilui erva mamish. Even though there was no actual gilui erva, if you were to take a step up a staircase, you had to make for Kohanim a pair of pants made out of linen. The Kohanim wore pants under the tunic. Wasn't that it was just a dress that went from shoulder to the floor? They wore pants. If they wore pants, then their erva is covered. What difference does it make if they're now widening their step? They're not exposed at all to somebody or the floor of the Beis HaMikdash that would be looking from underneath. Why do you have to build a ramp to avoid Harchiv Psiosecha? Nevertheless, Harchavas HaPsios, the simple widening of the steps, even with pants on, Karov Legilui Ervahu. It's close to Gilui Erva. It's not Gilui Erva Mamish, but it's close to it. It's not Sias. V'atanoi b'hem minig b'zoyet. You are behaving in a disgraceful fashion. Towards what? Towards the stones of the Beis HaMikdash. So of course then the Kal V'chomer is made, stones who don't care about their own covet, and you have to be careful treating them that way. For sure you have to be makbid on treating your friends without bizayon. From this Rashi we see a few amazing things. We see the concept of tznius. Even though there's no gilui erva mamish, but a certain refinement still should exist, and that's towards and that's for men. That's for men. People mistakenly think that tznius is just something for women. It's not true. It's also something that exists for men. I mentioned earlier in the year about a trip that I took this time of year during intercession 19 years ago. It's funny how it just came up. I got a call last night from the Mashgiach of Neri Yisrael in Baltimore, Rabbi Weisbord. And I mentioned to him about that trip and some of the time I spent with the late Menayel of the high school, Rabbi Tendler, whose yahrzeit is Tu B'Shvat coming up. When I went 19 years ago, again in my search of trying to find Rabbeim who I thought were superstars, and I sat in their shiurim and I walked around and tried to understand how a yeshiva was organized. And I told you some of the stories before. So they put me up in the dormitory. I wasn't married. They put me up in the dormitory. It was my second year as a rabbi here. In the wing with the seniors. Apparently they have a divided freshman, sophomore, junior, seniors in the wing that the seniors were housed in. So they had a special guest room that I used for the week I was there. I was very impressed with something that I noticed in the dormitory. The way that I had scheduled my schedule during that week or so that I was there, I went to Rav Kalman's shir, the 10th grade Rebbe Shir, during the morning. I wanted to really view him. He was, and in the afternoon, since I was on vacation, so I decided I was going to finish Maseches Sukkah over the afternoon Seder. So we just learned Maseches Sukkah. I made a siyum in the week. It took a week. That was my vacation from learning, you know. It was Bekiyas. Listen, just Gemara Rashi. And at night, I also did that. Mostly I learned Bekiyas afternoon and night. And then I would go to sleep in this dormitory. I'd usually go back around 1 in the morning. And most of the guys were getting ready to go to sleep, and I saw the way it's set up in the dormitory. Like here, there's a public bathroom, showers, and so on. And I saw guys coming in and out of the bathroom to take showers wearing robes. I was very impressed. In other words, they didn't walk out of the shower and then to their room down the hallway, which is like a towel wrapped around themselves. They were wearing a long robe. So in my meeting with Rabbi Tendler on Friday at the end of the week, I told him I was very impressed with that. And I asked him, how do you enforce such a thing? He says, very simple. The curfew for the ninth graders is at 11:30, and they have dorm counselors. So the dorm counselors and the ninth graders, they tell them, this is the rule. And they're there, and, you know, guy breaks the rule, then there's the usual disciplinary actions, whatever it is. By the time they're in 12th grade, they understand. They get it. They understand this idea of tzniyus. And the way he said it to me was, to just have the towel wrapped around you like this, with the upper part of the body exposed, he said, you wouldn't dress that way in front of the Rosh Hashiva. Minig bizayon. You have to show respect to your friends too. That's what he explained. I was very impressed. I was impressed that he was able to accomplish something disciplinary-wise from ninth grade, that by the time the guys are in 12th, they didn't even need anyone to tell them. At 1 in the morning, the dorm counselors weren't telling anyone what to do. They already understood. They understood. It was an idea of tznius. In fact, I sometimes point out that the camp that I was in until I was about 23, I never saw B'nai Torah, serious guys, wearing shorts while playing ball until I went to Moreh Shekolo. I never saw it. The guys always wore pants or sweatpants. It was an idea of tznius. I remember I was in complete surprise. I'm not saying there's anything necessarily wrong, but I was surprised at tznius. I remember once sitting in the Beis Medrash here downstairs without a jacket on. I wasn't a Rebbe yet, and I was just sitting back in my chair with my hands like this, and Rav Shimon Rum, who was a Rosh Hashiva here, is not even on that list, he had died so many years ago. Rav Shimon Rum learned in Nevardik, in Europe. He learned in the real Nevardik Yeshiva. And he knew the Stipler when the Stipler was learning in Nevardik, in Pinsk branch of Nevardik. And he said, how can you sit like that? You're exposing yourself. I said, I'm wearing a shirt. He said, this part of the body, you're not supposed to expose like that. I was like, okay, I didn't know. Years later, when my chavrusa, Rabbi Bieberfeld, and I visited Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg a number of times, we asked him a shaila. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about how a person is supposed to get dressed in the morning. How do you get dressed? Under the covers. What do you do? Certain parts of the body are not supposed to be exposed. And I asked, knowing what Rabbi Ram had told me, and it seems to be, if you look in Siman Gimel and Shulchan Aruch, a person is not really supposed to expose even the upper part of his body like that. So I asked him, how do you put on an undershirt? I asked Rabbi Scheinberg, you know, that's the one who wore all those talisim and tzitzis and the tefillin all day. So I asked him, and he showed me how to put on an undershirt. It was unbelievable. So you see, you guys, you don't wear a jacket when you put on tefillin, so you're not used to this, at least most of you. So, you see, if I know Yitzi, but okay, but most guys don't, so you know, I'm a lefty, so I put my tefillin on my right hand. So then the jacket goes over like this. He said to me like this, you wear a robe, and you take your hand, you put the undershirt over your head like this, and then you take your hand out of here, and then you're able to slip the undershirt through your hand like this, right. And then you go to the other side. And he said, I do it. He told me how to do it, so I do it. You know, that's if you want to be careful, to try to do things and call it the best possible way. You know, Rabbi Scheinberg even told me, even though this is a machlokas haposkim, I asked him at the end of that year, I asked him, is it okay to wear, for a man, a shirt that doesn't cover the elbows during the summer when it's hot? He said, absolutely not. The elbows have to be covered. It's not just halacha for women, it's halacha for men. Now, Reb David Feinstein disagrees with that. Reb David Feinstein holds that it only has to cover till the elbow for a man. You know? And Reb Moshe Feinstein, actually, my mother told me, she knew the Rebbetzin, that Reb Moshe Feinstein's Rebbetzin used to buy long-sleeve shirts, cut them and hem them a three-quarter sleeve. They were made by her. She cut the long sleeve shirts and hemmed them just below his elbow because he wanted his elbow to be covered even during the summer. You look at the pictures. During the summer, they have pictures. And you see, she made them personally. But Reb David held not that way, and I've seen him in short sleeve shirts. I've seen him. He comes into his own base madrash, a very laid back Rosh Hashiva, as Rosh Hashiva's go. He takes off his jacket, and he sits in his base madrash, and it doesn't, you know, and he has, I've seen him with short sleeve shirts. So it's machlokas, but you understand the idea is that there's a concept of tznius that applies even to men. Karov l'gileyav. This is not, as I express every time, I'm not telling anyone here what to do. That's not the point. I'm not testing anybody. I'm not going into the dormitory. Here in Yeshiva, anyway, they have the famous story with Rabbi Cohen coming into the Strenger Hall, the old high school dorm, and a guy came out of the shower. I don't even know if he was wearing a towel. He wasn't wearing very much, and Rabbi Cohen walked into the dorm and said to the fellow, "Where's your tzitzis? Where's your tzitzis? God's wearing next to nothing." Where's your... So, you know, we have different standards, apparently. But the idea is, as it says in Shulchan Aruch, this is in Siman Gimel, you can look this up. A person goes to the bathroom. A person uses the bathroom. They're only supposed to expose themselves as much as is necessary. A person takes a shower. There's no choice. A person goes to the mikveh. There's no choice. Even if there are other people there, there's no choice. There's no choice. But when there's a possibility of being more tsunua, it has an effect on your whole being. And it's a din in Shulchan Aruch. The question just is, exactly what al pi din? How far does this go? And for that, every person has to ask the person they ask their own shailas to. But the concept, which is what I want to express, is karov l'gilui erva. There's an idea of tznius, even for men. Rav Shechter, Shlita, said many times that tznius is an attitude. It's an attitude of not drawing attention to yourself. If a person is playing ball, running from one end of the court to the other is very normal. But if a person is on the street and he just starts running, so it depends a lot on the age of the person and how they're dressed, you would find it very attention-drawing. If you would see me running down the street, you would think there must be an emergency. Because if I was running in a suit like this, it must be some emergency. I wouldn't just be doing that for my health. It's something that draws attention. It's also l'harchiv p'tiyosecha. That's taking steps. Also might be karov l'gilui erva. In what way? It's not snua. It drives attention. What snua is supposed to avoid? Attention. We don't feel it. We don't feel it. This type of thing, it's so out of our system. We think it's strange. We think that it doesn't make sense to me. What is this? This rabbi is talking craziness. It doesn't make sense to me. In today's day and age, who thinks this way? But take a look at page 3. A chazal that Rashi quotes also in this week's parsha that my Rebbe, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zechutzak Levracha, used to express many, many, many times. It says in the pasuk by Mara, Vayitzak el Hashem ve'erer Hashem eitz v'yashach el amayim v'yimtku amoyim shom shom lo chokum mishpat v'shom niso. There at Mara they were given chokum mishpat. Says Rashi, what does it mean they were given chokum mishpat? This is before Kabbalah Satoro. V'mara nosalam miktas parashios shel Torah. At Mara was given to them a few of the halachas of the Torah. She's asking them that they should work on. They needed something to learn be'in. So Hashem gave them Shabbos. That you can work on. There's so much to learn in Shabbos. Paraduma, v'dinin. Dinin is Sanhedrin, that's what we're learning. All the various arguments that happen between people, you need Dayanim who know the halacha, chosh mishpat, to deal with. They came out of Mitzrayim with a lot of stuff. They literally took half of Mitzrayim with them, in terms of, and then the rest they got at the Yamsuf. So there's a lot of material, and once Jews have money, they're going to squabble about it. So you have to have, but they did. And Shabbos, Shabbos. What about Paraduma? When was the first time Klal Yisrael needed Paraduma? To be able to be holy enough to go into the Mishkan. The Mishnah only came into existence after Kabbalah Satorah, after the Maisa of the Chet HaEgel. Then the Mishkan was built. There was no need to do anything with the Parah Aduma at this point in time. Why then, my Rebbe asked, was Parah Aduma one of the first three halachas taught to Klal Yisrael? And my Rebbe answered, because we know that Parah Aduma is the ultimate chok. We don't fully understand how it's metameh es hatahorim u'metaher es hatmeim, those who were holy become tameh, those who were tameh become clean. We don't understand. It's like a self-contradictory mitzvah, the Parah Aduma. It's beyond our understanding. It's a chok. So Rav Aaron explained that Hashem wanted to show us right from the outset, ultimately, every mitzvah is a chok. You can't really understand the reasons behind anything. Us Eliel, the understanding of the Kodesh Baruch Hu is so far beyond ours, we don't really understand why these mitzvahs are the way they are. And by giving us Parah Aduma as one of the first three mitzvahs we were taught, we were told that as a hashkafa, as a yesod. Why? Because since you don't fully understand the mitzvah, you can never change it. You can never change it just because it doesn't make sense to you. Just because it doesn't feel right to you. The halacha is the halacha. And just because it doesn't fit in with me and my box and where I'm coming from and what I'm used to, that doesn't matter. In 1976, the yeshiva was in turmoil. Right here. Dr. Belkin was no longer the president of the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva University, and they were looking for a candidate to replace him, which eventually ended up being Rabbi Lam. At the time, there was a certain individual who very much wanted to become president of Yeshiva University, eventually became president of Bar Ilan University. It was stopped because of one speech that the Rav gave. The speech where he famously said downstairs in this base medrash, "I'm seeing ghosts, I'm seeing ghosts." Where he said, if such a person becomes president, I'm not worried about him, but I'm worried about what the next one will be, or what the next one will be after that. That particular one who was aiming to become president had ideas of building a mikveh in the basement of Stern College, not for the married women. He had a lot of very interesting ideas that he thought were very progressive in halacha. You understand what I'm saying? You didn't understand what I said. He had a lot of progressive ideas of things that were not usher, but he said, we gotta go with the times. Gotta know what's really happening here. We gotta adjust accordingly. The Torah. To fit the times. And the Rav told the following story to answer a question. We talk about saying Kriya Shema as being Mekabel O Malchus Shemayim. The Rav asked, why is it called Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim? Why not just Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim, acceptance of the kingdom of heaven? Well, what's this Ol? Ol means a yoke. What's the idea of Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim? He told the following story. Perhaps those who were in my Navishir heard this story from me before. I heard it on a tape. I was not in yeshiva in 1976. I was 6 years old. And just thinking about those days, tonight is Gimel Shvat. That was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's yard site. Tonight was the big yard site shir that people came from all the yeshiva auditorium to hear Rav Yoshe Beres shir in honor of his father's yard site. That was tonight, Gimel Shvat. Tonight was the big night. It's been a long time. So the Rav said as follows. There was a woman who was a Balas Tshuva who was very sincere, orthodox, grew up not religious, now was pursuing a shidduch. She wanted to get married and she had a lot of problems finding an appropriate young man. But finally one day she met an appropriate man and they agreed to get married. Before they got married, she mentioned to him, or he had heard, that there's a concept of inviting one's parents to a wedding, even if their parents had passed away. His parents had passed away. How do you invite parents to a wedding? if your parents, l'aleinu, if they passed away, you go to the cemetery and you invite them. You don't have to hand an invitation to the gravestone. You go to the cemetery and you talk. And whatever aspects of the neshama is still attached to that area in the ground, whatever that means exactly, that's beyond my mystical understanding of the universe. But you ask, you invite, that's what's done. His parents were buried somewhere in Europe. He took a plane, went to the cemetery, it was probably a very moving experience, and he came back, and he's describing to his kala, he's a Baal Tshuva, she's a Baalas Tshuva, he's describing to his kala what he saw, and he said, you know, there's something very strange that I saw on my father's gravestone. Two hands. She didn't know what it meant, but she said, we should find out. They went to their local rabbi, who said, hands on a gravestone, that means that you're probably a Kohen. I'm not going to make the formation of it, though I can, and I'm allowed to, but so what? Well, as we mentioned, I think it was yesterday, because I had this issue with this woman in graduate school, the one who wanted to shake my hand. I forgot her name. She was Jewish, and she wanted to marry a fellow, and the fellow was a Kohen. And the halacha is that if you, I'll just say the words as you understand what they mean, if you slept around when you were younger, and these are, they were not religious when they were younger. I can't even say, based on the student, Mrs. Ben Noach, I don't even know if it's wrong. I don't know. But now she's an Orthodox Jew. As an Orthodox Jew, she can't marry a Kohen. I remember with the woman I was dealing with in graduate school, I had Rabbi Sobolovsky, and we tried doing research to see if there was any way out. Couldn't find anything. There's no way out. You have this woman now who was trying so hard to get married for so long. She gave up her whole life to become from. She finally found the right guy, Mr. Right, and he's a Kohen. So the rabbi didn't know what to do in the story, and the rabbi went to his rabbi, who also was perplexed. And that rabbi went to his rabbi, who was the Rav. And the Rav had the Shaila. What do you do? And the Rav said, the Torah says, it's Usur. He said, you have to cry for this woman. You have to cry for her. You have to feel bad. You have to feel Usur is Usur. And he said in this story, that's what it means, Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim. It's not just accepting Malchus Shemayim. Ol means it's a yoke. A yoke keeps you on the straight and narrow. That's what keeps the animal plowing in a straight line. Sometimes it's a yoke, sometimes it's a burden. Sometimes it's very difficult to be Mekabel Malchus Shemayim. But that's what you have to do. Because the Rav said we have to keep halacha even when it's not convenient and it's not comfortable. It's an ol. I'll quote the exact words that he said. I'm not going to do it in his German accent. He said, it's an act of surrender to the logic of Sinai over our own logic. There are many Jews, many groups of Jews, who don't want to hear this. But the Torah says, v'ha'azanta, we're supposed to be trying to hear this. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard. I never heard this before. That's really what I have to do. That's what I'm not allowed to do. V'ha'azanta. It's not enough just to be mekabel. Im shamoa tishma. There's also v'ha'azanta. On page 4 in conclusion, and this is a good way for all of us to remind ourselves of this yisod, to remember it, because it's so important. At the end of our life, we're going to get the final exam. Wouldn't you guys love it if the first day in yeshiva I came in, I think I told you this the first day in yeshiva, if I came in the first day in yeshiva and said, guys, here's the final that's being given to you on January 10th or January 3rd, here's the final exam, the final Ian exam of the semester, here are the 22 questions, here are the 100 questions. I'm going to pick from those 100 the final exam. Here are the 100 questions. Wouldn't you work so hard the whole semester, listening to every shiur, checking, oh, that answers this question, that answers this question. Believe me, I've thought of doing this. Except I don't think it would work. The first few weeks people are into it, after that they just forget. The haraya, our whole life is that way. We're told the six questions on the final exam, right here in this Gemara in Shabbos. And we don't remember every day. The second question on the final exam, which has many pshatim in that question, when we enter into the final judgment, they say to him, second question is, Kavato itim la Torah. Shurfal Hirsch. This means, did you set the times to the Torah? Were you Kovea itim the times to the Torah, which is the correct way? Or Faker, it's just the opposite. Were you Kovea the Torah to the times? That's the wrong way. We're going to be asked that. It's a question that governs our entire life. Were you Kovea Itim to the Torah? Or Chas V'Shalom, you set the Torah to the times. Don't let society affect you negatively. Rather, our job is to use the Torah to mold the world around us. Good Shabbos. Okay. Okay. Thanks.